The Earth's crust holds the key to understanding the history of our planet. Recent data has provided overwhelming evidence that the Earth is not millions of years old. What can we learn from the Earth's crust? Stay tuned.
The concept of plate tectonics is that the Earth's crust is divided up into what are called plates.
This is Science, Scripture, and Salvation, a Creation Radio Journal. I'm Chris O'Brien with the Institute for Creation Research. Discoveries made in the last 100 years have provided vital insight into the history of the Earth's crust. Join us today as we look at the fascinating topic of plate tectonics. What do we mean by plate tectonics? Dr. Andrew Snelling is a geologist with the Institute for Creation Research.
The concept of plate tectonics comes out of the recognition that the Earth's crust, the Earth's surface, the rocky exterior, is divided up into what are called plates. And this was determined because at the boundaries of these plates we find earthquakes and volcanoes. So these indicate that there's Earth movements. And so the idea was that there's these distinct plates on the Earth's surface separated by places where there's movements, and that therefore these plates must be moving slightly with respect to one another. So tectonics is to do with earth movements, large-scale earth movements, and so the two words were put together, plate tectonics.
Before this evidence was ever available, the idea of movement in the Earth's crust was proposed as a theory based on biblical references. Bill Hoche is a geologist with the Institute for Creation Research.
Turns out Antonio Snyder in 1859 was a man ahead of his time. Who in the world was Antonio Snyder? He proposed that the Earth's continental crust was composed of plates and that these things split up during Noah's flood in a catastrophic way. And why not propose this? Doesn't Genesis 1 say, "Let the waters under the heavens be gathered together into one place," and it was so? Who hasn't noticed the jigsaw puzzle fit of the continents, the way North America and Europe and South America and Africa seem to fit together like a puzzle? But the world was not ready for Antonio Snyder's ideas. His idea that during the Genesis flood is when the continents split apart. That was in 1859.
Someone might ask, just how did the original concept end up being considered a process that took millions of years?
It was some 40 years later. Alfred Wegener, German, took his ideas and attached to it slow and gradual movements of plate tectonics. And eventually, although not immediately here either, but eventually this was accepted widely. And by the time of the 1960s, when more data came in, the world was ready to accept the idea of plate tectonics. What kind of data came in 1940s, 50s, and 60s to convince the world that such a radical thing has happened or might even still be happening? Data that came in from the study of earthquakes and seismology about the interior of the Earth's composition. Data concerning the deep sea floor. Nobody knew what was down there before. What was the nature of these big ridges running down the middle of the ocean basins called today mid-ocean ridges? And what about these deep trenches on the flanks of certain of the continents? How do we explain all this?
It was during this period, from the 1940s to 1990s, that the idea of evolutionary plate tectonics was held as a hope for evolutionists.
It was more of a tepid, slow and gradual, continual 2 centimeters per year movement type of thing of the continents over the Earth. 1994 marked a return to the ideas of Antonio Snyder. Scientists from ICR, including Dr. Steve Austin, others including Baumgartner, Humphreys, Snelling, Vardaman, and Wise, who have all been affiliated with ICR in the past years, they revived Antonio Snyder's idea, particularly with Baumgartner's notions of what's called runaway plate subduction. He proposed that you could conceive on a theoretical basis, a physical basis, large-scale plate movement. And why not suggest this for the flood?
Dr. Baumgartner was indeed one of the men that revived Antonio Snyder's original concept. He has a Ph.D. in geophysics from UCLA. And as a staff scientist at Los Alamos National Laboratory in New Mexico.
I believe the Genesis flood is one of the most important issues today that's facing Christians. And the reason is that it's, in my opinion, one of the most crucial issues in defending biblical authority. If we as the church don't press the battle here, we're at risk of forfeiting a major front in the overall war against the forces of evil. So I believe this is a very important issue, very strategic issue at this point in history. To try to understand that better, in my assessment, the only pillar left holding up the entire evolutionary edifice is its uniformitarian interpretation of the geological record. Ever since Lyell in the early 1800s put forward the idea that the present is the key to the past as far as understanding Earth history is concerned, enemies of the Bible have latched onto that idea, and it's still the dominant view.
The creationist interpretation of today's world is founded on the Bible's statements about the past. But the evolutionists insist that the present is the key to the past.
With that sort of interpretation, there are lots of implications. Basically, the idea is that one can correctly and accurately interpret the past in terms of present-day processes operating at present-day rates, regardless of how far one goes back in time in the history of the Earth. And what this interpretation implies is that there's been a grand succession of different types of plants and animals during various periods in Earth history, and this history spans billions of years, hundreds of millions to billions of years. And I would say that this interpretation is to be contrasted with the biblical revelation that we have that there has been a major cataclysm in the Earth's past that destroyed all the air-breathing life on our planet, and the plants and animals we find preserved as fossils are a consequence of this single year-long global catastrophe. So we have two very different ways of interpreting the Earth's past.
There is one key event that determines how we view the history of the Earth.
The historicity of the flood, the reality of the flood, is an extremely important issue, and we're never going to defeat this grand lie of Satan involving evolution if we don't get serious about pressing the battle in connection with the Genesis flood. Now, there are a number of issues that, if we're going to be serious about defending the flood, there are a number of issues that we need to address. And one of them is just the basic nature of the catastrophe.
A catastrophe in the Earth's past is the most logical explanation of what we have today.
Was it just a matter of a lot of rain and a rise in sea level, or did it involve much more than that? Well, I believe the evidence says that it involved much, much more than that. If we go to the Grand Canyon, for example, we see thousands and thousands of feet of horizontal layers of sedimentary rocks. And these layers extend horizontally for hundreds to thousands of miles. You can trace these same layers, vast distances. And so one issue is what was the mechanism that produced such laterally extensive layers of sedimentary rock? And another related question is, why was there so much sediment deposited on top of the continent? You would think most of the sediment would be washed into the ocean basins, but it turns out that most of the sediment on the Earth is on the continents and not in today's ocean basins. And so we need an explanation for that.
There are a number of issues that relate to one another, such as, what was the mechanism for carrying sediment so evenly around the world? Or what caused the sea level to rise and then fall on a worldwide basis? Or how is the 40 days of rain sustained? What was behind all of that?
As I sought to try to find answers to these sorts of questions, a major revelation occurred in my experience with the realization that the Genesis flood had to be primarily a tectonic catastrophe, that the evidence for seafloor spreading and continental drift provided a crucial set of clues as to the overall nature of the flood catastrophe, and that all of this had to unfold within the biblical time frame. The most violent parts of that catastrophe, I've concluded, had to occur during the first 40 days and nights when there was so much rain taking place. I believe that so much rain is an important clue as to what happened and the time scale over which it happened. So this bit of understanding that the flood was almost certainly a tectonic catastrophe led me to go back to graduate school, get a PhD in geophysics at UCLA, and invest a major part of my life ever since in trying to develop computer methods, computer tools, to model this catastrophe and understand it.
Much research has been done during the years that Dr. Baumgartner has been studying this subject.
Over 2,000 holes have been drilled in the ocean sediments on the ocean floors since about 1970, and this has provided a wealth of information about the history of the ocean basins. And the startling conclusion is that all of the ocean floor on the Earth today has cooled from a molten magma where there's been a spreading apart of two ocean plates. All of the ocean floor on the Earth today has been produced in that manner since the time in the continental record when the dinosaurs were first being buried in the sediments. So the ocean floor is younger, had to have all been formed since the beginning of the Genesis flood.
The Genesis flood is the key to understanding the Earth's history, and the Earth's crust is a key to understanding the Genesis flood.
We know that at the start of the flood there were large-scale earthquakes. Seems to indicate that all the fountains of the great deep were broken up at the start of the flood. And then at the end of the flood, Psalm 104 indicates that the mountains went up and the valleys went down and the waters fled from off the earth. What kind of activity was going on during the flood? It seems like at the start it was marked by large-scale tectonic activity. At the close, it was marked by this kind of vertical movement in the earth's crust. Sounds like maybe the entire flood was marked by upheaval in the Earth's crust, and indeed in the interior of the Earth as well.
A sudden violent moving of the plates of the Earth's crust is attested to by its condition today. It was such a big event that even creationists have been guilty of underestimating it.
Yeah, I think Antonio Snyder probably shook his head when Christians were not ready to swallow a flood so catastrophic and so big that even continental plates moved. But the evidence today is looking that way. It seems like when God does do judgment on the earth, he does really quite some job of it. Well, I think as Christians, the lesson in this, we need to think big when we think in terms of Noah's flood. Let's not be guilty of thinking on a small scale.
The catastrophe of Noah's flood demonstrates the power of God the Creator over his creation. It also serves as just a small taste of the power of God as judge of the world for its sin. If you'd like more information about creation science and the Creator, just ask for our free information packet when you contact us at the Institute for Creation Research. To ask for today's free offer, please call toll-free 1-800-7-GENESIS. That's 1-800, the number 7, and the word Genesis. And you can address your letters to ICR at P.O. Box 2667, El Cajon, California, 92021. If there's a topic you would like us to cover on the program, then email us at radio@icr.org. ICR's website address is www.icr.org. Science, Scripture, and Salvation, a Creation Radio Journal, is a production of ICR. For the Institute for Creation Research, I'm Chris O'Brien. Thanks for tuning in.